Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. There are some things in our social system to which all of us ought to be maladjusted. Hatred and bitterness can never cure the disease of fear. Only love can do that. We must evolve for all human conflict a method which rejects revenge, aggression, and retaliation. A foundation of such a method is love. Before it's too late, we must narrow the gaping chasm between our proclamations of peace and our lowly deeds which precipitate and perpetuate war. One day we must come to see that peace is not merely a distant goal that we seek, but a means by which we arrive at that goal. We must pursue peaceful ends through peaceful means. We shall hew out a mountain of despair, a stone of hope. Let us begin our time of worship as we explore what ideas of reconstruction means at this particular moment of time. I now invite Dale Botts to light our chalice. Would you please join me in saying our unison affirmation?
This flame affirms the light of truth, the warmth of community, and the fire of commitment. Love is the doctrine that we share. The quest for truth is our sacrament, and service is our prayer. To dwell together in peace, to seek knowledge in freedom, to serve human need. Thus do we covenant with one another.
Each Sunday, our children collect food donations to provide food for those in need. This month's food challenge is pancake mix. We do participate in the Interfaith Monthly Food Challenge, and it is just one of the many ways that our congregation serves a larger community. We now invite the children at the front for the Time of All Ages presentation before going to their educational classes.
From you.
Good morning. As Casey said, this morning we're talking about Martin Luther King Day, which is not coming up for a couple of weeks, but we have so many things happening that we're getting it in a little bit early this morning, and we certainly carry the spirit of Martin Luther King with us throughout everything we do here at UUCF. And I have a book I'd like to share with you this morning. I think we have some pictures from it that will be playing up on the screen as well, but it's called Martin's Big Words. Everywhere in Martin's hometown, he saw the signs, whites only. His mother said these signs were in all southern cities and towns in the United States. Every time Martin read the words, he felt bad until he remembered what his mother told him. You are as good as anyone. In church, Martin sang hymns. He read from the Bible. He listened to his father preach. These words made him feel good. When I grow up, I'm going to get big words too, he said. Martin grew up. He became a minister like his father, and he used the big words he had heard as a child from his parents and from the Bible. Everyone can be great. He studied the teachings of Gandhi. He learned how the Indian nation won freedom without ever firing a gun. Martin said love when others said hate. Hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that. He said together when others said separate. He said peace when others said war. Sooner or later, all the people of the world will have to discover a way to live together. Over the next 10 years, Black Americans all over the South protested for equal rights. Martin walked with them and talked with them and sang with them and prayed with them. White ministers told them to stop. Mayors and governors and police chiefs and judges ordered them to stop. but they kept on marching. Wait. For years I have heard the word wait. We have waited more than 340 years for our rights. A long time, right? They were jailed and beaten and even murdered, but they kept on marching. Some Black Americans wanted to fight back with their fists. Martin convinced them not to by reminding them of the power of love. Love is the key to the problems of the world. Many white Southerners hated and feared Martin's words. A few threatened to kill him and his family. His house was bombed. His brother's house was bombed, but he refused to stop. Remember, he said, if I am stopped, this movement will not be stopped, because God is with this movement. The marches continued. More and more Americans listened to Martin's words. He shared his dreams and filled them with hope. I have a dream that one day in Alabama, little Black boys and Black girls will join hands with little white boys and white girls as sisters and brothers. And after 10 years of protest, the lawmakers in Washington voted to end segregation. The white-only signs in the South came down. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. cared about all Americans. He cared about people all over the world, and people all over the world admired him. In 1964, he won the Nobel Peace Prize. He won it because he taught others to fight with words, not fists. Martin went wherever people needed help. In April 1968, he went to Memphis, Tennessee. He went to help garbage collectors who were on strike. He walked with them and talked with them and sang with them and prayed with them. On his second day there, he was shot. He died. But his big words are alive for us today.
Wait, is that him in his grave?
And that's him. Yeah, that's him there. That's Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. What's that? Well, he was in jail at one point. You're absolutely right. And we're going to talk about that a little bit this morning, too. But the
I've heard this story before.
And you've heard this story before. Well, it's a good story, so I'm glad you have. I'm glad you have. And the thing about this story that's so important for us here at UUCF is this idea that love is stronger than hate, and that the way that we make the world a better place is by loving it and trying to create better situations for everyone. So this morning I want you to go to your classes and I want you to think about Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and all he did and what you can do to help love this world into a better world. Our worship associate will light a candle for you this morning. If you have a brief personal joy or sorrow you would like to share with the congregation. We do this practice. We share what's happening in our lives because it's a way to remind each of us that we are not alone, that we don't have to carry the burdens of our life alone. We don't even have to carry the joys alone, that this is something that we do in community is share what might be happening in our lives. I invite you to do so at this time.
Good morning. My name is Carolyn Brislon. As I told the congregation, I suffered a stroke on the 9th of November. Well, that was okay. I drove home, went to bed, all was well, I thought. But finally, I was hospitalized. And during that hospitalization, I was given a medication not a serious one, nothing that you haven't all heard of, but it has caused me more problems than the stroke did. So watch what medications you take, what medications you are given to. Trust your doctor, know your doctor, and make sure you're not taking something you'll be long sorry for.
Nine weeks ago, my father-in-law, Jason's dad, broke his back and had to have emergency surgery to avoid paralysis. He's been in agony every moment of every day since he woke up from that surgery. So they just found, through some scan, finally, that the apparatus that's in his back was done wrong. Something's loose, and basically tomorrow he's going in to redo his back surgery, which comes with all kinds of risks, and I'm very stressed out about that. So keep us in your thoughts.
And I do thank you all for your thoughts and your kind words during this time. It's been extremely helpful. Well, we know, as always, that the words that we hear on Sunday morning are only the beginning of what might be happening in each of our lives, that the person sitting next to you has their own joys or sorrows that they're holding this morning. And certainly, with everything happening in our world today, I invite you to treat each other with kindness, to proceed gently, to recognize that that we do need the love and care of one another. And in that spirit, I also invite you to visit after the service. And this is important, so try and remember. I know it's always hard to remember something from the middle of the service after the service. But the caring table, which is currently, it's the part of the magazine table there by the kitchen. But the caring table has cards on it. It has, and you can fill out a card for someone. If you know of someone that's a friend of this community that's in need, you can put their name on that card and have other people sign it. There might be cards there already that have been filled out for you to sign. Go ahead and do that. Stop by that table. Make that part of the habit of what you do on Sunday mornings, because it's important that we continue to care for one another, especially in these times. I think I'll just sit up here this morning. Would you please join me in the spirit of prayer, meditation, and reflection? Two nights ago, a clap of thunder woke me up. Actually, it was the light that came before the thunder that woke me. A light so bright that from behind my closed eyelids, I felt that I could see all eternity just for a moment. And then that clap of thunder, which sent my stomach up into my throat and my heart beating, and awoke me from my sleep. It felt like a reminder of all that nature can do. It felt, if we use religious language, like God knocking on the door just for a moment. I think life is made of these moments, these reminders of how small we are in the grand scheme of things, how there is this great, vast universe out there full of possibility, and that sometimes can be hard to see because of all that might be happening in our lives. As we talk about some of the isms this morning, racism, sexism, and so on, we see that those things are great problems in our world. And sometimes they appear so great that we forget that they are part of a much larger universe. That as great as those problems are, as complicated and complex and as ingrained as those systems of oppression are, they are still minute within the grand scheme of things. Let us consider in silence, just for a moment, all that is out there and available to us, all the possibilities of the universe beyond what we know, and our place within it, small and yet important. I invite you into a moment of silence. As frightened as I was by that clap of thunder, I couldn't help but also feel a certain level of awe, of amazement. Amazement, the power of nature, awe at the sense of something that is greater than me, and while my restful sleep was broken, it ended up feeling worth it. Worth it for the reminder of all that is available to us. A certain kind of grace that we can indeed live in amazement of.
Peace.
You may well ask, what direct action? Why sit-ins, marches, etc.? Isn't negotiation a better path? You are exactly right in your call for negotiation. Indeed, this is the purpose of direct action. Nonviolent direct action seeks to create such a crisis and establish such creative tension that a community that has constantly refused to negotiate is forced to confront the issue. My friends, I must say to you that we have not made a single gain in civil rights without legal and nonviolent pressure. History is the long and tragic story of the fact that privileged groups seldom give up their privileges voluntarily. Individuals may see the moral light and give up their unjust posture, but as Reinhold Niebuhr has reminded us, groups are more immoral than individuals. We know that through painful experience that freedom is never voluntarily given by the oppressor. It must be demanded by the oppressed. Frankly, I have never engaged in a direct action movement that was well-timed according to the timetable of those who have not suffered unduly from the disease of segregation. For years now, I have heard the word, wait. It rings in the ear of every Negro with a piercing familiarity. This wait has almost always meant never. We must come to see with the distinguished jurist of yesterday that justice too long delayed is justice denied.
I realize I forgot to put my watch on this morning, so this sermon might go on and on. Nah, I won't, I promise. My mother always had this thing about celebrity deaths coming in threes. You ever heard this? I could never quite make sense of that at the time. Like, how long between the celebrity deaths could it be and still count as part of the grouping of the three, right? A week, maybe two, she'd say. And sure enough, you can always find three celebrities who died within a two-week period, but you'd also find more than threes. But she'd always just say of those lesser-known names on the list, well, they don't really count. I understand her wish to make sense of things with numbers. In this great, vast universe where the stars glimmer enticingly in the night sky, visible to our sight, but located in far-off sky countries we've never visited and know practically nothing of. Meanwhile, in our own country here and now, such a speck in the vastness of space itself, a fraction of a second in the cycle of time, amidst all the worries and concerns of government shutdowns and border walls, it would be nice to think there is a pattern, some kind of order to things. So, in honor of my mother, since she started us off with the number three, we'll use that as a completely improbable but instead intuitive way of making sense of what we have to talk about today. Therefore, it is a sermon of threes. And we begin with three rules for preaching about Martin Luther King Jr. Day. Rule number one, before doing anything else, read the letter from a Birmingham jail. So why is this rule number one? Because in these times we live in, many of us don't know what it's like, though perhaps a few of us do this morning, what it is like to be a government employee wondering where our next dollar is coming from during the shutdown. We may not know what it's like to be a black male walking down the street or an immigrant separated from their children at the border. The injustice that happens to other people can feel far away from our own lives. And yet we know King says injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. If we remember that, we remember that we are called to respond, whether we feel it directly or not. Rule number two, do not use the I have a dream speech. Darn, is that really the rule? I love that speech, but this early speech is not reflective of Martin Luther King Jr.'s fight for equality in his later years. A fight that did not end with the passage of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and the Voting Rights Act of 1965. King's later focus shifted toward achieving economic equality and combating poverty in the United States. I Have a Dream was earlier, before a certain reality of the aftermath of the Civil Rights Movement began to set in, showing these victories as a beginning, not an end. We don't then need to have a dream this morning. We need to have a plan. Rule number three for preaching on MLK Day. Instead of preaching about King, preach about the things King would have preached about. This is the biggie. We've had enough lessons in who Martin Luther King Jr. was. The question is, do we get it? Are we able to learn from what he brought to the world then and reshape our lives today? I want the answer to be yes, just as any of us want our lives to have had some meaning, for some small trace of the good we've done to live on in a form that can continue to evolve and change with the needs of an ever-transforming world. Whatever you might see as good in your life, whether it's the children and grandchildren that are part of your legacy, whether it's the work you've done, whether it's the relationships you've built, wouldn't it be good to know that this good continues to move across the face of humanity after you are no longer on the planet? I think that's how we best honor Martin Luther King Jr. Not by talking about him, but by speaking words he would have us articulate, no matter the consequences. So today, in that spirit, we explore yet another set of threes. The first, Reconstruction. Amid the wreckage of the Civil War saw white and black alliances controlling every state house in the South. White and black alliances controlling every state house in the South. Together, these white and black alliances elected new leaders, created new constitutions, guaranteed all persons a right to public education, increased criminal justice and labor rights, and promoted the idea of a living wage. And in just 4 years, this Reconstruction saw the rise of the Ku Klux Klan, attacking so-called white race traitors alongside black leaders. And soon the deconstructionists were rolling back voting rights, taking away criminal justice reform, and undoing equal protection under the law, saying they wanted to, quote, take back America. In a few decades, all the gains of the first Reconstruction had been overturned, certainly by the end of that century. So what is the second Reconstruction? Well, that's the period from 1945 to about 1968, and it's commonly known as the Civil Rights Movement. And I don't have to go through all that for you to know. You know your more recent history, I'm sure, that we've seen that same pattern of both progress and backlash. Reverend Dr. William Barber is the author of The Third Reconstruction, How a Moral Movement is Overcoming the Politics of Division and Fear. And this is a book available from our own Beacon Press. That's our UU Press. And Barber says that we are now in the midst of a third Reconstruction era, a time of various groups joining together to create the same kind of positive change we've seen in those other eras. Many of his ideas have served as the foundation for the Poor People's Campaign. We've talked about that here before. The Poor People's Campaign is known as a national call for a moral revival,
It's a time of reconstruction, aiming to connect movements that seem to be interconnected. We're talking about ableism, racism, classism, sexism, all these movements that are trying to address these various isms. And like the two Reconstruction periods before, it's also a time when we are seeing attempts at deconstruction. And we saw this as soon as Obama took office with concerted efforts to delegitimize his presidency. And Barber sees the most recent president's election strategies following an all-too-familiar pattern similar to backlash from previous Reconstruction eras. We're talking old-time tactics of fear and hate-mongering, and this is what's disturbing, easily adapted to the 21st century. So here is where our two threes intersect this morning, if you're doing the math here. Our third rule, which was to preach not about King, but what he would have preached about. And the answer to that question is indeed, I think, the idea of the third Reconstruction. King, of course, worked from an ethical, faith-based perspective. What we're talking about this morning is a moral movement, one dedicated to overcoming that very fear and division so prominently on display in our country today. Barber says, "So what many extremists are trying to do is abort the third Reconstruction. That's why they are telling America this myth. You want a great America? Deny public education. Deny health care. Deny living wages. Deny labor rights. You really, really want a great America? Deny immigrant rights. Deny LGBTQ rights. Deny women's rights. You really want a great America? Deny the right to vote. You really want a great America? Turn everybody against everybody. Pit Muslims against Christians and women against men. And if you really, 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 really want a great America, make sure that people can get a gun quicker than they can vote." And I tell you that in this moment, we better know who we are and where we are, and that in this moment of a possible third Reconstruction, we are called to speak truth in times like these. And what is the truth in times like these? Three more things for you to consider. One, it's time to secure pro-labor, anti-poverty policies that ensure economic sustainability by fighting for employment and living wages with health care for all. Two, time for educational equality. Three, it's time to ensure voting rights, women's rights, LGBTQ rights, labor rights, religious freedom, and immigrant rights. And I'll tell you, 15 years ago or so, when I first found Unitarian Universalism, I think it was easier to be a Unitarian Universalist. We had things to fight for, sure. But in some ways, I think many of us, I include myself in that, thought we were virtually done with other things. And racism had mostly been taken care of in the civil rights movement. Women's rights had mostly been taken care of with Roe versus Wade. Gay rights would soon be wrapped up with marriage equality. And I think people of good conscience have had their eyes opened in the last few years. I think many of us have had to get real and realize that racism, misogyny, homophobia, xenophobia, nationalism, and even truth-telling are still on the table as major concerns. It was easy then, well, at least some days, not all that long ago, to come to a Unitarian Universalist church, sing a few songs, have a quiet moment, and go home feeling like the world is an okay place and we're doing our part in it. And I feel like my job is to nag all of us, myself included, to remember that our eyes are open now, that we see so much that is wrong, that the work is just beginning, that we are yet in another period of U.S. Reconstruction following two that had come before, where much of the advancement was undone by the subsequent backlash. What will this one bring? I'll tell you, I long in moments like this to just give all our problems to God. If only I could believe that. Sure would make my job easier, right? But nowhere in my rational mind and nowhere in our Unitarian and Universalist history do I find this as a viable theological option. Our human problems are not God's problems, whether we personally believe in a God or not. They are human problems of our making and our resolving. Yet how I secretly wish I could make for you one Sunday morning after another of just lighting candles and saying soft words. And do you realize this is the goal of Unitarian Universalism? Have you ever thought of that? Because we never explicitly say that. Because it can be hard for us to even see that possibility, and maybe that will never come. But we are here so that someday people can sit in a room like this and light candles and just feel gratitude for the world as it is. We are here so that someday people can only bring the concerns of their immediate individual lives to have those burdens shared with the community. No need to bring worries about the systems of oppression that beat people down. Sorry, social action, you guys are out of business in this future world. Those worries, those concerns about systems of oppression, they're gone in this someday, probably never, but maybe possible future church. A time when we don't have to worry about making the world a better place because it is the best it can be. Can you even imagine? I know there are churches out there that will offer that illusion once a week for an hour. But when I escape, I go to the movies. I want my church with a healthy dose of reality on the side. For however any of us make meaning of our lives, whether we lift up the raw clay of human potential in facing the challenges of human evil and the random might of nature, or whether we see ourselves as a piece of a divine spirit, part of a creator God from which we turn to as a wellspring of strength, whatever it is, at the end of the day, our spiritual life is tied to our human life. Our spirits are not enriched solely by sitting quietly and lighting a candle. As much value as that practice may have, a truly viable faith is one also married to the action of transforming the world for the better. So in keeping of my theme of threes this morning, I will end with that unlikeliest of threes, three wishes. Rub the lamp. Wish number one, I wish for all of us to make some sense of things. Life's big questions can't be explained as neatly as a rule of threes, patterns of numbers to give us a sense of order to all the chaos we experience. So to make meaning, we have to begin by looking into ourselves. What are we connected to from within? When we feel that connection to our own conscience, to God, to however you define the grounding place for your spirit, we lean toward meaning making. Now, it doesn't bring complete order to the chaos around us, but spiritual grounding moves us into places of alignment and wholeness that help us better understand the world around us. Wish number two. I wish for all of us to find our place in moving the world toward its better self. Whether that's participating in the Poor People's Campaign, the Women's March next week, doing your job as best you can, bringing art and music into the world, offering emotional support and kindness to others you encounter, whatever, and it could be anything. You have to understand that. Sometimes people feel like, well, my thing isn't really what he's talking about. No, your thing that you bring to the world is there for you to help make it a better place. Whatever that may be. And my wish is you find it and find a way to do it. And finally, my third wish, that we all find ourselves connected in community. That there is a sense of love fostered that is greater than any individual. That this love that runs deep in our traditions of Unitarianism with its emphasis on caring for others, and Universalism with its emphasis on the inherent value of each person, but that it's even more expansive than that. Found in all religions in their version of what we call the golden rule of treating one another as we would wish to be treated, all pointing back to a spiritual reconstruction of our inherent human worth and dignity, and how we treat one another. So this wish ultimately is one about learning to see the other as ourselves. Can we do that? Reconstruction takes time. Reconstruction involves failure. As much as we'd like to, we can't count to three, click our heels, and go home again, for building home, a real home for all, is part of the construction we are called to do. But we can count to three, take a deep breath that reaches to the depths of our souls and blows out to the limits of the stars, and then say, what's next?
Thank you. Thank you. Our offering is a vital way that we show our gratitude for this community. By giving to UUCF, we know that this community of caring will continue to do its good work in the world. We thank you for your generosity.
For our closing hymn, we will be singing number 169, We Shall Overcome. So please rise in mind, body, or spirit and join us in singing.
extinguish this chalice, but not the light of truth, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment. These we carry in our hearts until we are together again. Would you please join hands for our closing words?
Martin Luther King Jr. said, "Life's most persistent and urgent question is, what are you doing for others?" May you go forth considering your own unique answer to that question. Until we meet again, amen.
Shalom, salam, namaste, and blessed be.
Go now in peace.